Hey Jack, Wilder's Farm. It's more like a what?
A compound.
It is. Welcome to Outside the Panels. My name is Michael, also known as Poet Air, and joining me as always is
I'm Blake.
What's up, outsiders? It's me, Chaz, and also, of course, with us, we got.
And I'm Jack, aka Synesthetic.
And this is our final episode of our Ed Brubaker miniseries. And we are focusing on Reckless, which is by him, Sean Phillips on art, and of course, Jacob Phillips, Sean's son, on colors. He's kind of trying to make his own Parker. If you've ever heard of Richard Starks, he had a bunch of novels starring Parker, who is like, it was like a crime noir series, and this is a character who has a kick where he answers people that have problems off a 1-800 number, and he takes care of those problems. And his name is Ethan Reckless. I absolutely love this book. It's the first in a series. The new one comes out in April. I know me and Chaz have read it before. I didn't know if Blake or Jack did. What did you guys all think of this, and what are your first thoughts on it?
Man, this book fucked hard. It was so great. It made me actually, every time I read Ed Brubaker or an Ed Brubaker Sean Phillips combination, I always fall in love with them a little bit more. And it's like, about, 20 issues into the comic, I'm usually like, man, I can't believe that someone can just write and create something this cool. And it happens every time I read something new of theirs, like never fails. Same thing happened with this. Very cool. I also love the Darwyn Cook Parker graphic novel adaptations. I haven't read the actual novels. I would like to someday, but there's like a million of them, and who has time for that? But yeah, I was totally picking up those vibes. Very cool. Very well done. Art always on point. Really excited that I read this late, so now I only have to wait like what, a month and a half? Not even 2 months for the sequel.
Yeah, it comes out in April. Yeah. So they got like a month and a week. I'm super excited for the new one too.
Wait. Let's get Jack's. I want Jack's first impressions.
Come on, Jack. Yeah. What's your first impressions?
I really enjoyed it. It like wasn't what I expected when I opened it up. Definitely in a good way, though. It's really unique juxtaposition on how they build the character and his, I don't know, we'll get into that. And the only complaint is that it was shorter than I thought it would be, and I'm excited for the next one.
Yeah, the length of this book is a real son of a bitch. I sat down to read like just half of it the first time I read it because I was like, it's before work. I'll just pound out the quick first half. I'll see what it's about, and I finished it all in that same morning. I couldn't put it down, and I was so mad. But like, yeah, you got like the Parker comparisons definitely are super fair, and like even like a equalizer in a way with like the phone number you call to get some help, the like shady kind of help. But I feel like even though those bones are like familiar, Brubaker and Phillips have a way of adding like a brand new heart, a brand new like muscular system. Because this book, yeah, like Blake said, it fucks hard, and it's so good. I just love every minute of it.
He's such an interesting protagonist. So Ethan Reckless, before he put up his 1-800 number, he was, as Chaz would say, a narc for the feds, and he was hanging out with the Weather Underground, or in this, he just calls them what, the Underground people, so he doesn't actually
The
refer to them.
Underground Hippie Railroad,
Yeah, the Underground Hippie
which is
Railroad,
pretty
and
cool.
it is pretty cool. And he kind of, he got into the feds because his dad was Naval Intelligence, and he got into being a fed so he didn't have to go to Vietnam. And he basically, a bomb goes off. He's in this group, and the leader is setting off bombs. He, not to jump too far ahead, he ends up falling in love with the leader's sister and also gets hooked on acid. And a bomb goes off, and it makes him not really remember that week at all. He has blank spots. And now he can't really sleep at night, and he has to basically unleash something inside of him so that he could feel calm again and get like normal rest.
Don't we all?
And
See,
it's.
I didn't pick up on like the need for him to unleash. It felt more to me like he's gonna do the job, and whatever that job takes, he's gonna do. Like he doesn't care
You
about the
might,
means.
yeah.
It's about the end. So
You
it's
might
not
be
like
right. It
gotta
might just
do
be
it.
a task he needs to accomplish.
Well, we see what kind of jobs he gets. Like, he has the chance to, like, you know, like repo that car for $2,000, which is a lot more money than $2,000 back when this takes place.
Yeah, this is 1981. So
he doesn't. he's not. I don't think he's always like taking the hatchet to the airfield kind of situation.
right. Yeah. You know?
he's not them, he, like,
walking around fully loaded, somebody's hatchet strapped or nothing.
Kidnapper.
I love that line, though, to kind of explain, though, what... Okay, so regardless of why he has to do it, he just... There's something different about his brain because of the bomb that went off. And I love that when he... There's this really up-close hatchet battle that starts at the beginning of the book where we get our introduction of both our hero, Ethan Reckless, and also Wilder, who is the villain throughout most of the piece of the book. And he's kind of just explaining, you know, the story, the 1-800 number. And then it's basically like, I love that line where he's like, well, you know, I have to kill you now, right? And then what's he say? Ethan kind of just looks back at him with a totally...
I know, man. I'm right there with you.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with your brother or something.
It's so choice. Like,
I'm right there with you, man. That's what he says. Yeah. Like a total of the hippie coming out. I'm right there with you, man. Well, he's holding a hatchet and there's just bodies everywhere.
Yeah, that whole opening sequence to this book, it's like one of those good, hard, cold opens of like, oh, fuck, we're right in the action, and then we get to see like how we get there, but like, it's so fucking cool.
It is so cool.
It's nuts. And then, like you said, it's brutal. Yeah,
everything about this book is just cool. Like, Ethan is cool, even though he's... I mean, technically, you would consider him like mentally handicapped. He can't sleep. He has like losses of time and has trouble remembering things. And he has like a associative disorder now because his like how he feels about people and loves and cares for, we learn as this extends, is not normal. He's detached almost constantly. But he's loyal, but he's detached, which is interesting. His hideout is an old movie theater. There's one part where he steals 3 cars in like at least 40 minutes. I mean, the dude.
One after getting his ass beat, no less. Yeah. Like, he was like, 5 minutes later, I stole a car. And I was like, man, you got up? Like, I would have been laying there like for 3 days.
I didn't break any ribs, but it'll hurt to breathe for a week.
This is totally a real movie theater too. It's totally based off the El Rialto, which is in Pasadena, which is like closed for years, and they reopened it in like the early aughts. But like the whole outside and everything is totally that building in Pasadena. And I'm just like, how cool would it be if you just had an empty movie theater screening your own movies, watching Night of the Hunter, which is a good reference to Starks.
Living in the office up top. Yeah.
His assistant just wants to play Decline of Western Civilization. He's like, yeah, those punks are going to ruin my theater.
His gal Friday, the, what is it, Penelope Spheres fan?
Oh, Anna. Anna's
awesome. I love that part where she's like, don't make me get a real fucking job, man.
Yeah, they're running out of money.
I love like what I was saying earlier about the juxtaposition and the character building is like the fact that he's like this crazy FBI, ex-FBI murder dude, but like he's also a total hippie surfer stoner dude.
Yeah, he loves
it's
acid.
Just a weird combination. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
I was gonna say that the reason he's got to take the next job is because they're almost out of money, and he's like, "How are we almost out of money?" And they're like, for all the weed and pills you bought? And he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta do something.
And that's how we get into our main case. She says that someone knows him from the past and asks him about the name Donovan Rush, which was his narc undercover name when he was hanging out with all...
Which sounds like a super narc.
Yeah, it does.
Name.
Donovan Rush.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's like, is that your real name? Like, he's like, no one's really named Donovan.
Hi there, my name's Donovan Rush, and I'm definitely not a cop. Nice to meet you.
Hey, do you all make bombs here? Just out of curiosity.
Is there an underground lair around here anywhere? Did I tell you my name's Donovan Rush? I totally smoked weed the other day and tried acid. It was
I just
real
did it yesterday.
Cool.
No more for me, please. Yeah. Yeah, I had my one tab for the week, and I'm good.
I love that when he's talking about his past, when he explains how he lost his virginity and tried acid the same night, and it didn't even matter that he was an undercover fed. Yes. He's like, it would have been the same way even if I wasn't. Like, how basically how good of a night he had, even though he was totally planning to narc all these people out and put them in. But he does feel even bad when he's a fed, because he does feel bad after, you know, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X are murdered. And, oh, Robert Kennedy is like, I started feeling like a rat.
Old Bobby K.
So she brings up the name Diamond Rush, and he ends up running into his old love, Rainy Livingston, who puts us on her main case, and she says a bank robbery she took after they were together, someone took 100 grand from her named Wilder, and it's also their reunion, which is nice because you see this really genuine love he has for Rainy. And I like that when they first meet, he tries to not bring up that, hey, obviously I was an undercover Fed, even though she clearly has to know. He just casually says, oh, that wasn't my real name. He's like, no one's really named Donovan.
Yeah.
It's just some made-up hippie's name. I was like, I don't think I've ever met a hippie named Donovan. Donovan sounds like a Wall Street broker's kid's name.
Honestly, my son Donovan. I kept thinking of Ray Donovan.
Well, oh, that too, yeah.
What about like the music artist?
I have met a Donovan once in my life, and it was in L.A. in the music scene, and I did not know him well. I met him at a party. He was some kind of artist, and his name was Donovan, but that also could have been made up.
Yeah, he could have been an artist.
He could have been one
of those undercover music scene narcs.
Yeah. I don't remember. If it was Rush, I would have definitely been suspicious.
It's like the James Bond code name of the FBI.
Donovan
like,
Rush.
You're our new agent, Donovan Rush.
Yeah.
But I thought there was already one. Exactly. So he's put on this case. Find this money so that I can escape. That's what she says to him.
Yeah.
Right? Lays out the land. Got his number from a chick named Liza.
Yeah, she's pretty much saying that she's had to like live as a fugitive since the bomb incident and is trying to leave the country.
Yeah,
exactly. So she's trying to leave the country so that she can live a normal life without having to worry about the feds. And she needs her money to do it. And some guy named Wilder has it.
And that shit don't fly.
No, he's not.
No, he, first of all, still has a love for Rainy. And he definitely feels responsible, I think, for her having to be on the run. So he immediately takes the case. I don't think there's even any money agreement.
And he also just loves killing shit, I think.
Well, Chess would disagree. I don't know if it's killing or he just likes intense situations. No. But definitely something inside of him now has to be, like, jogged. For him to be able to rest and kind of function like a normal human being. And he first goes to, is the guy's name Randy? I think it's Randy. He goes, or Mark. Is it Mark?
Yeah, it's Mark.
There's a Mark or Randy. Okay, so he goes to Mark, who's a mechanic. And I love then when he shows up at his work, he's like, what the hell do you think you're doing? Showing up my work. What do you think I think? And he's like, I did it because I knew it'd basically make you freak out.
Yeah.
But he threatens him and gets more information. I have a question with this guy. Knowing that we found out later without giving it away to everyone listening, what did Mark actually know?
I think he just knew. Yeah.
The truck stop.
Like the edge of the circle was what Mark knew that would propel Ethan forward deeper into this labyrinth of twists and turns.
He knew almost nothing, but just enough.
For him to head up to Mendocino County. Yeah. this book is such a love letter. As a Californian myself, now living in Nevada, from someone that used to drive from Southern California, Northern California all the time. God, this book makes me miss California because he knows like all the right spots.
Yeah.
And he draws it so well, like what the actual drive looks like. And he says the right freeways, where he also does in Criminal. I feel like Criminal is a big love letter.
Is he from California?
Yeah, he's born and raised, lives there now. I'm pretty sure he lives in Northern California.
He knows California in and out. Like...
I wouldn't be surprised to live near you. Like, what artist was it? The guy that did Vision?
They went up to,
he
like,
drew a Willits, whole Magneto right? issue. Well, I mean, there's an artist. I don't know if he's worked at Brubaker, but there's an artist. What's artist of Vision
Gabriel
named again?
Walta.
Gabriel Walta, the guy that also did Sentient. Yeah, he drew a whole Magneto issue, which was clearly downtown Nevada City. Like,
yeah.
And he had him go to, like, town hall. So I just messaged him, and I was like, that's all Nevada City. And he's like, you're right. He's like, I have my vacation home there. And I was like, that's crazy. And I was just thinking that I wouldn't be surprised if many artists. I mean, he probably gets paid well. He has a lot of big books that sold well. I mean, Vision did well. But yeah, I think Ed Brubaker definitely lives somewhere in Northern California, maybe in Mendocino County. Like a lot of his books seem to have that Northern California vibe. Wrong Time, Wrong Place has that great Northern California town in it, which is one of my favorite Brubaker stories. But he really captures the spirit of California and kind of Ethan's whole trip, and definitely even LA and Southern California. So from Mark is when he screws up. He tells Rainy where he works out of, and she ends up back there because she doesn't know where to go because someone showed up at her hotel and broke her windows, went through her stuff, and just wrote on the window, "Stop." So he lets her know where he works out of. So Anna's obviously pretty upset because they have this girl she doesn't know there. And they have this kind of tender reunion for a moment, and then something else happens. What do you guys have to say about this part of the book?
Shit was explosive.
It was explosive.
Also, it's beautifully paneled for such a horrific scene. The actual like one page spread of it into the motion that continues onto like the next page was just super choice. Like Phillips really like killed the look of it.
He's so great.
That whole
book,
scene
yeah.
was amazing. I remember I was just kind of like laughing to myself because I got there that she like goes to move the car and you know something's coming, you know, but you're not sure what, you know, that he's gonna go like. It's like if you were in a video game, he's going to the final boss. Like, we don't waste any time. Well, what we think is the final boss. But anyway, like, when she goes to move her car, and I was just like, that's weird to just, like, include this. And I was like, man, what if her car blew up? And I turned the page, and I was like, fuck! Like, I was like, holy shit! And
it's just so clearly laid out, yeah.
Like, it's just, I love, like, how just big it is when you turn the page. Like, that was such a cool, like, comic moment. Just, like... explosive, yeah, like pun intended, but pun like required. You can't say anything else about it.
Nah.
So
how did it kill up this super important character so soon?
Yeah. You think she's gonna be in it long and then nope. And you know, like this chapter I love a lot. I love where he basically talks about like after he got the bomb blow up, they put him at desk work, and he basically just reads all these articles about scientists saying the world's going to end because of gas and oil, and people aren't going to stop driving cars, and they're not going to start driving planes, and maybe we already doomed ourselves by setting off the nuke. And he's just like reading all these files while drinking, which kind of gives him the reason he did the 1-800 line, because he figures, why not help someone while we're here, even if it's just for a couple days to make them feel better. And I love that part where he's telling Rainey that before Rainey goes in her car and explodes into the ether. Which definitely is an explosive moment. And it's a bomb again for him. He's very lucky he was not closer to that car.
Yeah.
It's literally a bomb for him.
It's funny, too, Blake, that you thought like it was coming. Because in my mind, I thought the Chekhov's gun was her saying, like, you fucking told her where we work? Like, I was half expecting her to be like, I'm going to go move my car, and I'll be back. And he was going to turn around, and there'd be like... two big goons just ready to like let's go inside and I'm gonna fuck up your business and your life, like, so I was definitely the first time caught just super off guard. And then that's
such a Chekhov's gun though, you're right. Is it ever brought up again, like what mistake it was by telling her where
he worked? Nope, she unsploded.
No, ultimately I
don't
think
there's not really any comeuppance of it.
Who's she gonna tell? Right?
Well, the story's not done, right? So it's gonna keep going. So whatever him telling her to come there is what prompted all that. He saw her die. He went for his, you know, take on. He got overcome with the need for revenge. And then now, you know, as we find out that this isn't a one and done deal, so it's going to move on. So him seeing her die is kind of like what triggers this whole big graphic novel series event. Or is there going to be three?
Yeah,
four?
But they're all going to be like standalone. Like the next case is like a couple years later.
Dumb. Well, shit.
I mean, it could come back around, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like, there could always be some Goomba in the background who's like, my fucking ex-boss twice in a row now. I'm going to fuck this reckless guy up.
Well, it's almost like he's telling the story, too, from the present. He keeps on talking about how 81 was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he's telling the story, so...
Maybe he's got some guy with a gun to his head, like...
Oh, yeah, and then he's just like an old man in his 60s.
He still just fucks him up, probably.
Yeah, he's just telling him all these stories, and the last story ends with him as an old man beating the shit out of this guy after he tells him the four books we just read.
You could tell me this story, or I could smash your hand with this wrench. Mark's revenge.
Oh, God, it's Mark.
Yeah.
Two elderly men held up somewhere. So then what characters always in these kind of books? You got to have the Fed you used to work with or cop you used to work with. And in Ethan's case, it's Special Agent Frank Hancock.
His handler.
It was his handler. And which is so true of the times. There's that movie out right now called Judas and the Black Messiah, but like how the feds were so after the Panthers about how he kept on not wanting to take down Anton, who's Randy Livingston's brother, who is the bomb maker that set the bombs everywhere, because he kept on waiting for them to hook up with the Panthers, even though that wasn't even realistically going to happen, but the feds were just so hungry to tie the Panthers to anything. And Frank is just, I love that he says the age is finally showing on him. He's like this old Fed guy. But I like about the relationship, it seems like Frank still has his best interests out for Ethan. Like, it seems like all this, he's still looking out for him, either for him not to get hurt or involved in this business. He kind of tries to tell him to back off. And then he drives him to the movie theater where he had never asked Ethan how to get there and clearly has known where Ethan's been operating this whole time.
I love that. He's like, "Will you just trust me?" And he's like, "Well, you just picked me up after spying on me and drove me home, even though you're not supposed to know where I live. You never asked me directions. So fuck you, buddy. I'm not going to be trusting you today."
Yeah.
The dialogue in this book is so wonderful. Like, I was paraphrasing, obviously, but it's so smart how we get these like visual scenes and then real quick whip dialogue. And it just moves really fast. And as we were talking about, it just is over a little too soon. It feels really good in your hands till you notice that, like, it feels too good. The paper stock, I don't know if you guys noticed, they changed it. They're back to the glossy instead of the like matte finish thick, but the paper stock they use is so thick. And so, like, you get this book and you're like, "Man, this is like a 220 page book." And then you start and you're like, "Oh no, it's like 90. Cause it's just it feels so good to read though.
It goes way too quick. It is definitely the paper stock. Cause yeah. I started reading today at noon to reread it. I read it when it first came out, kind of forgot how long it'd take. I was like, "Oh, is it noon? Have a good 90 minutes." And then I finished it. It was 12:40 and I went, "Fuck!"
I kept unfortunately didn't have the pleasure of reading a hard copy.
No.
But
lucked out.
I unfortunately didn't get to read a hard copy, but it yeah, no, it still tricked me though, because I like didn't look at the page count. I just assumed that it was gonna be like a chunky book, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, "Wait, it's already done? What the fuck? I want more."
It's not fair.
Yeah.
So when's the new one coming out?
The new one's coming out April.
Oh, cool. That's not long from now. Yeah.
No. So Rainey's death sends him up. You know, he's not even worried about money anymore. He's pissed. He wants to avenge her death. And he goes up to the Ukiah area, which is in good old Mendocino County, the blue truck stop, two blue truck stop. He goes up to this truck stop that Mark told him about. And there's a waitress there that he can stake out that'll lead him to Wilder, a lady named June. And I love that drive where he's just telling more stories as he drives up to Ukiah from Southern California. It's such a beautiful layout from freaking Sean and Jacob. And then I love everything he does, like in this build up, how he messes up at first, how he goes and smokes pot while he waits and goes in at like 4 a.m. to watch her for like 4 days, June. Realizes she's selling drugs to truckers, and then kind of she confronts him because he's been kind of sloppy. But from here on out, it's just him planning and executing stuff, which I absolutely love. But it's such a great way to see him do the things he's going to do, because at first, like I said, he's sloppy. And then what comes next after he basically, because he messes up with this June lady, she's got his number, and then he gets assaulted by these two mugs, which reminded me so much of Big Lebowski. Because he's in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And then it's like the Rambo Big Lebowski. He's in the bathtub and there's just two dudes in his living room that beat the shit out of him. And I'm like, "Are they going to take his rug? What's next?"
I like how he throws the
really
towel at
the room
him
together
to try and like throw him off a little bit. And all I could think too was like, now he's just standing there bare ass naked. That's going to throw me off if I'm trying to fight some guy. And it's just like, he's just hanging in the breeze like a windsock or something.
I'm sure that was his thoughts. Like, what are they going to think when I'm butt ass naked?
Well, yeah. And then like, what are they going to tell their friends? "I got my ass kicked by some guy who was naked." Like, no, they can't. They can't do that. They're going to be too embarrassed.
And I love how
they still lied. Like when he follows him, like they beat his ass and then he like rolls over and like rubs some dirt on it and he's like, "Oh, I'm okay." And he goes and steals a car, and then he follows him to the diner and he sees him talking to June, the server chick who's selling the cocaine and stuff. He's like listening to him from outside, and they're like, man, I thought he was gonna break his back, like he begged for his life, and the whole time like they were just beating his ass, and he's just like laying there smiling like, I can't really feel it, I know it hurts, but I don't really feel it.
I don't even try to fight back, like,
oh, he was crying,
get him later, kind of like, oh man.
And he gives the best advice: if you ever plan on following someone from a long distance away for a good amount of time to see where they're going, all you need is a screwdriver or an ice pick, and you poke a small hole in one of the rear lights, and then you could kind of just hang back and follow them without them noticing that you're following them. So I guess
yeah, that's a good tip.
Yeah,
good FBI tip.
That's why I keep an ice pick in my fucking trunk.
Oh, I thought that was for lobotomies.
I mean, on the roadside too, but that's a different business, Jack.
Criminally, always from my follow people names, business. In this, he then goes to Eel River, which is a real place in California, and there's a real casino there, and that's where he kind of finds these guys, and I love how they come out more awake than when they went in, but he finds out that Wilder's operating out of the casino in Eel Valley, and that's a real place and real thing. Also, a great part of Northern California, and some great craft breweries all up in this area. That's all I kept thinking of was craft beer, craft beer, craft beer. You got Lagunitas, you got Eel Valley River, you know, Hill Valley Brewery, all these places are up there. But he finds out where Wilder is working out of, and this is kind of the beginning of his vengeance, where he doesn't get what's going on, but I kind of had an idea what was going on next, because once he gets to the airport, I was like, are they going to tie in this real life stuff? Which I won't jump ahead, but they do tie in some real life stuff that people were doing, because I was like, oh no. Because he immediately gets alerted when the guy says he looks ex-military.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too that in essence, he dodged the draft by going into the FBI and becoming an undercover agent. But the way that he does all the reconnaissance and everything, reconnaissance and, like, hiding in the brush or whatever, made me think, like, damn, maybe he could have done well in old Nam. But maybe FBI
training
isn't
so
good. Who knows?
Well, I kept reminding myself, like, sometimes I was like, man, this dude's just, like, fuck, you know, but then he was trained as an op, an FBI op, and I mean, I'm sure their training and like firearm training and stuff is more rigorous than like your average police.
This fool don't use a gun. this guy's like Brock Samson. Yeah,
he does that. He's like, I got my merit badge and the hatchet at the FBI Academy.
I got my merit badge and not giving a shit.
I love that he yells at Frank and says, I'll only call you if I fucking need you, and then he ends up calling Frank several times for help.
Yeah, he's like, I'm never gonna fucking call you, pretty much is like his tone.
And then 2 days later, after he sees the airport, he's like, Frank, I need Wilder's profile, and then he just gives it to the girl.
Yeah, I like how what we find out about Wilder then, because the whole time, you know, it's not that it paints Ethan as a coward, but this whole they mentioned several times that like he was scared of the war. He did anything he could to avoid from getting sent to Saigon. And this, when we find out about Wilder, who he knows he's going to have to confront, you know, everything's leading and pointing to this, you know, not only did he fight in Vietnam, he did two tours. He's wanted for 12 murders.
Yeah.
Like, no one can find this guy.
Tunnel
like,
rat, his no file, less. Yeah,
he was a tunnel rat. And he's like, and then he went crazy and they wouldn't let him serve in the army anymore. And he's like, oh, this is what I got to do. Fuck.
I love the reflection too between him and Ethan of basically all the shit Wilder had to go through and like what Ethan would have gone to if he didn't dodge a draft and become a narc.
I mean, and, in a way, you know, decided to narc people out. He went through his own sort of set of ordeals,
trauma,
right?
Yeah.
He just didn't emerge with a 12 body kill count and a disappearance good enough to slip through the FBI, the CIA, and everybody else's fingers, I guess.
And a compound.
He's
got
to have a pretty high kill count, I would think. Like,
I would think,
He did something to get that. That guy gave him that movie theater. I did this thing for this guy, and he just gave me this building.
I don't think that you get that good at killing people without killing people.
Yeah.
not to spoil too much here, though, but at the end, there is a part where where Wilder notices that his men are like incapacitated but not dead.
Oh shit.
But they're not dead. So, yeah, that's like when he's going up there, they're all alive still, yeah.
But before we get into the big climax of this book, right? The big thing we've been building towards, let's put all the pieces back on the table. right? So Ethan is hired by Rainey to get her money back from Wilder, an associate that she claimed stole her proceeds of a bank robbery, like the $100,000, right? I gotta go get this back from him. She dies in an explosion, presumed to be by Wilder covering up his tracks, right? Trying to kill, eliminate any leaks, any leads to his location. So he moves up, tracks down what's going on. We find out Wilder is moving some sort of drug, I imagine, and laundering the proceeds, the cash, through the casino.
It's a that's blow.
Was that a good?
It's definitely
yeah. They say it in the book.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but I don't know. I like to imagine that as meth for today's era, or something, yeah. Or maybe if I read it in a different mindset, I'd be like, man, they're smuggling so much weed up here. Because that's like the fun drug where nobody gets hurt ever.
Yeah,
that's then not I true. Find out that people do get hurt a lot. Right, that's not true. Book.
Yeah. I mean, with weed, you would not. Yeah, it'd be nicer if it was this weed they were smuggling out of Nicaragua. But I mean, he notices
it grows so
that
much better down there. It's lush.
No, it grows great and humble.
Starts to execute his plan, or he waits till. Yeah. It does.
They're going for there.
And yeah. Mendo, where this is at. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they have a whole strap named after them.
They definitely do.
Or several.
So he starts to execute his plan where he waits until the airplane pilot and the guy pumping gas are alone. And he kind of just walks up and confronts them. And I love how he just punches the dude right in the face after basically saying hello to him.
One man versus a compound. Let's not discredit this fact either. How is this man going to take on 15 to 20 armed gentlemen back at the compound? I know.
We know how dangerous a compound is.
I mean, I don't know. One man might be able to take on Starlight's compound.
Let's not send Ethan reckless
the
up
way
there.
That you guys talk about it, I don't think anybody going in is coming out.
No. Coming out fried.
But it's going to be one of those wild, wild country
out,
part of things.
Coming out as Donovan Rush. They're going in Ethan reckless and they're coming out a brand new man. I did also love the way that he just like fucking once he's like, all right, here we go. It's fucking all action from there. It's like he pushed the boulder and now it's in motion. There's no stopping it. So when he walks up to the pilot and the guy who's guarding the plane, and it's just the guy's like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he's like, oh, Wilder sent me to get you. And he's like, before he even has a chance to say what, he just fucking rocks him and grabs the gun and is like, don't fucking move. And the pilot's like, bro, whoa, I just fly planes. And then it's off to the races. The fucking shit gets wild.
I love that once that happens, so you visibly see Ethan with a AR-14 M16 kind of assault rifle. Like he has it. He takes it, he beats up a guy, he takes it, and he holds the hostage. And then the next scene, you see like all these, there's just bodies everywhere. Well, and he's got a hatchet.
We get to see Wilder come to terms with the idea of like, my fucking shit's on fire.
Wilder.
And also I'm coming down from cocaine. I can't think straight. Hold on. There's some guy who's stabbed in the gut. He's like, I got fucking stabbed. And he's like, I don't give a shit. I gotta go stop whatever's going on.
Put pressure on it. That's what he says. Put pressure on it. Man, the only thing that would have made that better is if, like, when he's talking about when they're like, you know, Wilder had been doing a whole lot of cocaine that day. Like, he shouldn't. If he would have just done a big old rail, like, I know who it is. And I was, oh, man, that would have been. I mean, that's what I would do.
If he had a little vial right before he went into the fight at the barn and he like popped the lid off
just,
and
like,
was
stuck
just like
his face in a Scarface pile.
Let's fucking do it.
or like Tony Montana or Deadpool.
Yeah.
Like when Deadpool 2 when he puts the cocaine in his mask and just slams his hand against.
Yeah. I mean, maybe now I know where Stephen King was getting all of his stuff from.
The white
so
horse.
Were we anyway?
So we're at the primary assault on the barn. All of his men incapacitated, all strangely not killed, which leads Wilder to find out who it is that's been doing this assault on him. But all for naught, because these two equals or opposites, however you want to describe them, cannot exist together anymore. I don't think either one of them will allow the other to keep on going.
I agree. I feel like I love that we get that chapter. You guys were just talking about the Wilder's point of view. You get that one chapter where it's from basically Wilder's point of view telling the story and him just finding all these bodies. And I love the balls on him to find all these people, you know, completely messed up by one dude with a hatchet. And he still has the balls to go in there with the machete and kind of tell this guy he's going to kill him.
Also, though, with a machete, like all of his dudes on that compound had guns and we don't know where they went. Right. But like, I imagine that Wilder, as a big like drug kingpin, would have a gun on him. But instead he goes for like fucking machete time.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I haven't done cocaine, so I don't know. Maybe it makes you want to do crazy stuff, like swing machetes at people, but, like, you could have solved that real fast with a gun.
Yeah, I can see how that's the result of a binger. Like you just get so mad, you grab the first thing that's there. Like, it would have been, it could have been, like, a letter opener. Like, we're lucky it was a machete.
Oh, man, imagine if it was in the barn and he grabbed that, like,
fucking indestructible.
And he was just like, let's fucking go!
A pitchfork would have been even funnier, him just running in with a pitchfork, like, I'm going to have to kill you now.
It would have been even scarier for me, yeah. The reader.
Dude, it was so brutal, though, when he swung that fucking machete and he just, like, blocked it with his arm.
Yeah.
Like, the bone. Yeah, he's like, the fact that, most people freak out, but the fact that I don't care is what gives me the edge. And then he just, like,
that explanation
throws his
is
arm
great,
into the machete
like,
blade.
And then he just fucking hatchets him in the belly.
Yeah.
He gets him like he was trying to cut down a tree. He just like, it's one of those full, like, all of the energy that just went into this arm that blocked the machete went down like one of those snake moves that you do, you know, like the arms like whoop to the other side and just came out as like whap in your stomach.
And he tries to save him then. Because he says, don't take it out. Yeah, don't take it out. That's basically holding the blood in, and he doesn't listen.
And he's like, fuck you.
Yeah. ends his own life. He's like, don't pull it out.
As machete fighters are wont to do, you live by the blade, you die by a blade.
He did have a white machete look, too. He kind of looked like a whitish Danny.
Yeah, he did have from the cover art, I give him that, like, nice aged Brolin. Give him that long hair and a mustache. That's
some other time.
That's the
we're gonna have
baby.
To talk about Danny Trejo's career, because I just recently did some research and it's fucking insane. But let's save that for another time.
Yeah, the stuff where he saved that guy in the bus and stuff like that, and how he used to be in prison, and I don't think he started acting in movies till he was 40. Yeah, like
yeah, kind of
he helps other people get out of jail and get into
something.
It's awesome.
Or he either just put out a book or just put out a documentary, one of the two.
That'll be cool. Good Patreon. We have a Patreon. We're going to cover everything Danny Trejo from his first cameo appearance to his most recent movie.
And then we need to do our own deep dive on
get
whether
on the
or
show.
Not the machete from the machete films is the same machete from the Spy Kids films.
Yeah.
I think it is.
It's definitely, right? Like, that's the same machete. It's Uncle Machete.
I think
so. The same machete for sure.
It's before he realized he had nieces and nephews and settled down to live the spy life.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the Fast and the Furious movies are going. It's all about spies and going into space and bullshit like that instead of stealing CRT
TVs.
Yeah,
I thought it was like
racing cars on the street and like running away from cops and doing nitrous boosts.
They have not gone to space yet. I would love them
Fast
if they
9,
were trying
my man.
To meet. I would love.
They were trying to meet
Tom Cruise and Elon Musk in space, and they're like, "We're going to shoot the next Fast in space." And I'm just like, "All these people need to stop. This is just spelling doom." Like,
they're going to like race their spaceship against Elon and Tom Cruise.
I want one where they're like all in electric cars, and so like the races don't make any sounds. It's just
man,
all just
that
like,
would be so exciting. Like, it'd be so tense.
I mean, I think it would be, but it would just, because they always just like celebrate
the
all these
fast
like, crazy,
and the sustainable
like, horsepower cars. And now, yeah. I mean, like I drove a Tesla one time, and it scared me. Like I've never been in a car that accelerated like that, but it doesn't make any goddamn noise. It's just like you just step on the gas pedal, and then like you're going 90 miles an hour, and you're like, "Fuck, like, whoa, what happened?"
Yeah, that is definitely how the Tesla feels. So while Wilder's splitting out and telling his story, this is when we get our first big twist that Ethan doesn't even have the right man.
Or he does. He does have the man that
right,
Rainey was looking for and the money that she wanted. But he is not the cause of Ethan's woes.
No, Wilder ends up being Rainey's ex-boyfriend. And he figures out he's the phone guy because Rainey and Wilder, they were together. Liza told him about the guy with the phone number. Now it sounded like a guy she used to know. And he basically explained to Ethan he would never kill Rainey or do anything to hurt her. And he's kind of like, fuck. And then he says the whole operation was the pilots. And that's where Ethan goes, oh shit, I had him tied to a chair and now he's gone. So that guy punched in the face originally was the whole mastermind of this scheme, which was Wilder was helping funnel coke into the country for the CIA. From Nicaragua, which they were really doing in the 80s. There's a movie about it called American Made with Tom Cruise.
I don't think they've stopped
so good.
It.
That movie is amazing.
That movie is so good, yeah. I mean,
they
could still be doing it, yeah.
They just got smarter about it. Better planes.
Yeah,
yeah, like in like Narcos too, where they show like how the CIA was like exchanging firearms for cocaine, bringing the cocaine back into America.
Yeah.
To like the guerrilla soldiers.
That's why Wilder and Ethan didn't have guns. They traded it for cocaine.
They were doing it to make crack too, to poverty like certain parts of the nation too. That was their
whole
reasoning for bringing all the coke into the country. And that's when he realizes, oh fuck, the CIA is involved. And it's where he once again meets up with old Frank Hancock after he ends up in the hospital again. What is it?
Well, he doesn't want to go to the hospital again right away. He's got a great line when he shows up all bloody and beaten right after events of that. And Frank's like, what the fuck? How long has your arm been bleeding? And he's like, I don't know, 12 hours? Listen, I got to tell you this like now. And he's like, Jesus Christ, sit down. We got to get you some help. And he's like, no. I got to lay my case out here. You got
to
see
12 hours is a very long time to bleed. Frank is right.
And all Frank has to tell him is, forget it, Ethan. It's Mendo County. It's Mendocino County.
And then he says immediately, it wasn't the CIA. We know who blew up her car. It was her brother, Anton, which brings the other big twist and has him set to is it a mental institution, I believe, where he's at? Or is it just a regular prison? Seems kind
of
like
it's
just
a little prison, bit of both. But I feel like it's one of those like high security.
Arkham Asylum.
We don't want you to go anywhere until you're healthy enough for us to put you in regular jail.
Yeah, where he's chilling with half a face, and he finds out because he can't remember anything, he doesn't remember that he told Rainey he was a narc when they were still together, and that she's the one that called and told Anton and narked on him, and that's what led to him holding a gun to Anton while he was trying to arrest him, and another girl in the Weather Underground trying to undo the bomb because she knew the feds were coming. And in the process of undoing the bomb, she blew herself in the house up, which sounds like a terrible idea. It sounds like someone not knowing about bombs trying to undo a bomb, which is something someone should never do.
It's all about the red wire or the blue wire. It's one of those two.
Yeah, it's that scene. I wish we could have seen that scene in the basement. It would have been like so many movies where it's like 6, 5, and they're like, what wire, red or blue? And they're like, blue, and it's like 2, and they cut it, and everything's fine, except in this instance, it would be like, 2, cut,
it's
1,
like,
boom.
It's like they were like, blue, and they're like, okay, cool, and right before they go to snip it, they're like in the process of squeezing their hand, the person's like, wait, red! And then it's too late. Like,
or there's like just 2 purple wires.
Yeah.
I love that Anton thinks it's funny that he can't remember any of that shit because Anton has half a face. He still remembers all of it vividly. But Ethan, with just like the small scarring on his head from the shrapnel, can't remember any of that shit that happened. And we find out that basically Rainey killed herself. She knew the bomb was in her car. She was setting up Wilder, who's her ex-boyfriend, and Ethan had basically killed each other because she had cancer, she found out. So she was trying to basically have the men that ruined her life kill each other. And
But then,
yeah, she did have a change of heart, he says. She tried to call it off, and Anton still let his sister drive with the bomb in her car because he said it was too late to go get it, which, I mean, I guess there was a moment when you're in prison, you make a bomb for your sister and plant it in her car, that it's too late. Who did he have plant that in the car for him? Was it her?
I'm saying, I think he got caught afterwards.
That's why he's in jail. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you imagine, like, telling your sister, like, I'll do this for you, but there's no take-backsies. I put that bomb in your car. I don't care if you change your mind. I don't care if you call me up Sunday and you're like, but Blake, I don't want the bomb in my car anymore. No, it's in there forever.
You got to learn your lesson here.
You sound like somebody with siblings.
Right? No, I'm pretty sure that, like, he was arrested, like, when that bomb blew up all those people. And he had somebody from that hippie underground railroad revolutionary group he was in set it
put
up.
Put the bomb in the car for her?
Yeah, I think that he was in prison when it got set up. Yeah.
I think so, too.
Once a bomb maker, always a bomb maker, I guess.
But Blake's so damn right about that. I mean, imagine your sister saying, no, I don't want to die in a horrible bombing. Please, I changed my mind. And then not doing it? I mean, well, honestly, in that moment, he's just as responsible as she is. She could have not gotten
I'm
going
to have to get all the way under your car again. I'm not doing that again.
I'm going to have to jack it up.
I'm going to have to get my toolbox out. And then what am I going to do with the made bomb? You can't just have that at your house.
And I had to make a bomb and put it under your car.
It took up all my time.
Didn't even get to do the fun stuff.
This is like Christmas in 1996 all over again.
Some of my friends are like shooting a music video and made some like pipe bombs for like the...
This is an intense like effect, video.
For effects? Yeah.
Holy like, shit.
And they got arrested and were like facing felony charges and had to explain in court that they were like shooting a music video and had homemade bombs with no licensing or whatever.
I feel like
permits.
Probably didn't go well when they said we were shooting a music. Why did you build these bombs? Oh, well, we were shooting a music video. And we needed some effects. Like, I don't think that
solved it. So.
The judge wasn't like, well, let me see the video. I got to make sure this is on the level.
And the judge is like, yep, that's metal as fuck. You boys are good. Get on out of here.
They're not in prison. I mean, they went to jail, but they're, they're out and about.
This kind of closes up our main section of the first story, which is great for the noir. Like, nothing's really happy. People died, but really... The people that did it was the girl who died in the first place, and then her brother who's already in prison. Ethan kind of can't, exact any more revenge.
He could have killed
it to himself. He could have killed Anton. He chose not to. Yeah.
Let him live with it. That's the best revenge.
And I love how he then does revenge on himself because he messed up. He lets Anna screen that movie for 2 weeks. The Decline of Western Civilization.
Just as he says.
I maimed 20 people and murdered some dudes.
Yeah, where he says they ripped out the whole front row and pissed on the carpet. Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah, that's not quite the balance I think the universe is craving for in that kind of situation.
Well, I mean, it's not like the people he killed were innocent either.
Well, he also let Anna buy a shitty Fiat.
And then it has the great final page in this where he's doing the thing he loves most. He's surfing, just like those Beach Boys who taught him. And he kind of, just wraps up the story with talking about how he thinks of Rainey sometimes. I'm trying to remember the last word of it. It's nice.
It ends so good. It's just like Pulp. It ends with the like, oh, and that's the story. Like just like a, super like...
I didn't think about Rainey that much anymore. And I guess I'm sorry about that. He just basically stops thinking about her after all this wrapped up.
Yeah. There's also a scene, it's early on, when he talks about Rainey for like the first time. And he's like, I wasn't going to go. Or no, he talks about like whether he thought he was going to go or not. And he's like, I end up going. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about this story. I was like, yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for telling me. Another part of me hoped it wasn't her. But we wouldn't be telling that story if it wasn't. I was like, man, yeah.
Yep.
Good. Good point, Ethan/Ed. You got me. I wouldn't be reading this if it wasn't actually her. Ethan would just go repo a car, I guess.
It is funny how like happenstance the plot is, but I mean the happenstances are super fucking intense. Like people die and there's explosions and there's like, you know, coke selling waitresses and
shit happens.
CIA smugglers, but it's just like, well, I talked to this guy, and then I talked to this guy, and my ex girlfriend showed up, and then she went out to move her car, and that damn thing blew up. So I went after this coke dealer, and then I found out that was the wrong guy. Then I went after her brother. Man, I just, you know, I finally went home and hit the waves. The end.
So I wonder what the next one's going to be about. I'm hoping that it follows up on the CIA thing, but I have a feeling it might just be like something totally separate.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how cool would that be if he just went up again? He was like, well, I got to go after the CIA.
It would be criminal reckless.
Like single-handedly take down going after the fucking CIA coke operation.
Him just show up at the Pentagon in a stolen car, and he's like, here's my next move.
Yeah, he's got his fucking hatchet ready.
The next one takes place in 1985, and things in Ethan's life are going pretty well. Until a missing woman shows up in the background of an old B-movie, and Ethan is drawn into Hollywood's secret occult underbelly as he hunts for her among the wreckage of the wild days of the 70s. Also, Nazis and other crazy guys, I'm sure. I think that was in a preview page I read.
That's awesome. And it's greatly named after a Jerry Garcia and David Grisham song, Friend of the Devil, which is always points for me.
Is that the one that he beats up that drug dealer in Half-Baked 2?
Yeah, Friend of the Devil is friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
The ghost of Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, it's a Garcia and Grisham song. Yeah. But I wouldn't mind if Anna's in it because it is called Friend of the Devil. Yeah. So I'm saying that seems kind of like it could be the one where he meets Anna because the whole point of Friend of the Devil means it's a friend of his.
But it takes place later.
Oh, it says it's later?
Yeah, it's 1985 and this one takes place in 81.
Oh, so it's 4 years later. Yeah. Oh, so that's going to maybe move to like 90s with him.
Maybe. Move him up to Seattle instead. Get all grungy.
Can I just mention how crazy of a song that is? It's about like running from the cops because you're gonna suffer a life sentence and like you have to go like see your four baby mamas all over the United States.
Well, I mean,
it's a reverse Fox on the Run. It sounds like
that's silly. That sounds like totally based on Neil Cassidy, who is such an influential person to the dead because he had like four or five baby mamas. Was constantly going to prison.
He lived up in Nevada City North San Juan until
he died when he was like 42. He didn't take his life. He took a bunch of lives. He was in Mexico at a wedding, and it was pouring. It was pouring and freezing cold, and he was on a bunch of barbiturates, which I don't know what that means, but it sounds like what's that thing everyone was hooked on?
It's kind of like
thorny,
like
thorny pills. Man.
Yeah, it sounds like he was on a bunch of Quaaludes and was drinking. So he took a bunch of barbiturates and was drinking. And he left the wedding and told all his friends, hey, I'm going to walk to the next town, which is 8 miles away. And he tried to walk in a t-shirt in the pouring rain in like really cold weather, high in barbiturates and drunk, to the next town. He passed out, got picked up by a migrant worker who carried him over his back to the town, to the hospital where he died because he was, you know, drunk and on drugs and passed out in a puddle until I don't know how long. No one really knows how long he was there before the migrant worker found him, but probably a long time. But yeah, he used to flip a hammer in the garage of where the Warlocks, before they became the Grateful Dead, would practice. And they would all practice to like his rhythm of flipping the drum when they were all on acid and doing the electric Kool-Aid acid tests and stuff like that with the Further Bus, because he used to drive the Further Bus. But all those songs, all those stories just seem like Neil Cassidy's crazy ass. He used to steal like 60 cars in a week. The dude was insane. Jesus. He's like Ethan Reckless type. Yeah, he's a total Ethan Reckless type, except with lots of kids and lots of different wives.
I think I'm thinking of a different Cassidy.
Yeah, well, they say that Casey Jones song by the Dead is about Neil Cassidy. But driving his train high on cocaine.
That's definitely about Neil Cassidy, yeah. A lot of their songs are about Neil Cassidy, yeah.
Yeah, he was the driver in On the Road, too.
Yeah, he's the main, he's the one who takes, yeah, he's from the book, and also, you know, he's Dean Moriarty. Oh,
he rode around with
Jack Kerouac.
The electric Kool-Aid acid test.
They had like government The Ken Kesey was working at that insane.
He was working at the Palo Alto VA. He stole a bunch of acid.
He stole like a whole deal of government acid. They just drove around and bought Dayglo paint and fucking handed out the best acid anyone ever ate to anybody who wanted it. Goddamn.
Still to this day. I mean, look what it started. The Grateful Dead.
We were born at the wrong time, gentlemen.
We got to start around.
People had the balls back then. Imagine working at the VA knowing this is like federal acid, you know, like CIA acid, and
we're just gonna
go in and steal all of it.
Like leaving that out for the janitor to be able to take. Like now you have to have, like in hospitals and stuff, you have to have like the key card to go get into the medicine rooms.
And Leary both went to prison a bunch of times. Leary would always escape. They definitely went to prison too.
Oh, I didn't know they went. I didn't know Kesey went to prison.
Not for long. Kesey didn't go for long. I think he maybe served 3 months, but Leary got arrested a bunch of times. He escaped jail twice.
Well, yeah, he was like doing experiments on kids.
He was bad. He was just giving acid to everyone.
Yeah, he's a bad guy. But Kesey,
And then there's also Ram Dass, who was in the mix. This is later on. It wasn't the original. Yeah. Oh, ho. Be married by Mary Pinksters.
Kesey was a Olympic wrestler, like a gold medal Olympic wrestler. And so they picked him out specially for the LSD trials, and that's how he got access.
Still, that's a lot of balls.
I like the idea of like, who should we test this acid on? I know, an Olympic wrestler. Like, the fuck kind of thinking is that?
Right? Well, like, it's like perfect. It's like perfect physical shape, I think, is why they did it. They're like, we don't know what it's going to do to their body, so let's pick somebody who's like perfectly fit.
It's going to fuck their minds. But what will it do to their body?
I hope all this stuff comes out and plays out later. Let's have Ethan team up with the Merry Pranksters or him run off with Neil Cass. I mean, they're already long gone by the time 81's here. But maybe I'll flash back, talk about when he was on the further bus and acting like a hippie. I love how this all got brought up when we were trying to talk about the next Breakfast Club, Friend of the Devil.
You got to note that your background on our Zoom meeting we're recording in is the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah, it's Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, which they were all definitely on acid while they were making that album.
It's the American...
We're not condoning the use of acid.
Oh, yeah, right?
It is the American Sgt. Pepper's. I feel like it came out before, right? I think the Beach Boys... I mean, the Beatles always said there wouldn't be a Sgt. Pepper's without Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
Pet Sounds is such a perfect album, one of the best.
Something weird too that somebody mentioned is that it didn't really make sense until I started thinking about it. But someone said that like Pet Sounds is the first emo album,
and I was like,
I could see that too. Weird. Yeah.
But then you listen to the lyrics and you're like, yeah, dude, actually that's kind of true. Like,
yeah,
emo music probably wouldn't exist without Pet Sounds, which is kind of strange because you think about hippie music and surfer music usually.
Well, Wilson was like losing his mind, Brian, while the album was taking place because of all the drugs he was doing.
That's why I love that era of Walk Hard so much.
Yeah. Oh my god.
You can learn how to play the fucking didgeridoos.
I need an army of didgeridoos.
While we're talking about music, even though I'm not a huge fan of Zack Snyder, I gotta say, the man's got great musical taste. Using Tom Waits' time on his like latest little clip, I'm like, you know, I might not like his directing, but I'm pretty sure our music libraries are pretty similar. That's all I think about with Zack Snyder now.
Man, just to like throw in a quick little tidbit about Zack Snyder, I cannot figure out if I want the Justice League to be like really good to make everybody just shut up and go, oh damn, that was pretty cool. All right, sorry, like that was cool, or if I want it to be really god awful fucking terrible so that the other side is like, oh. Like, everybody's just so annoying about it.
I think
online.
People are still really annoying online.
I can't figure out where
I want it to fall in the terrible. Because I want everybody who fought for this shit for like 2.5 years.
They'll never
or whatever,
admit it, though. They'll never admit it. It'll just be a fight. Like, what's it called? The Last Jedi. It'll be the same thing. The Snyderheads will never admit it's bad. And then everyone else will know it's terrible.
There won't have any, like. They won't have any shield to hide behind no more. They won't be able to be like, well, if you look at the original vision, then you would see that they had to make compromises and that made it an inferior. Because he got to reshoot shit. He got to put characters in it that weren't even fucking in it in the first place, which doesn't make sense if he had it already done. Like that whole shit about like, look it, guys, there is a Snyder Cut. you all thought so, and it's right here behind me. And then they're like, we're going to make it. And I was like, it's already fucking made. He showed the reels. And then they reshot a bunch of stuff, jam more people in it. Like,
there's nothing to back it up on then.
The people that are going to like it are going to like it, regardless of if it's good or bad, which is frustrating. Because I want it to be really fucking bad. Like, I really want it to, like, just nail the coffin shut.
We'll update you guys in 2 weeks when we've all watched it. I'm going to watch it for, like,
I want them to be like, they only gave him $75 million.
They only gave him.
What are you supposed to do with $75 million?
They only gave him four fucking hours.
Since Batman versus Superman, because it was fucking terrible, and every other movie by DC before that was terrible.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's why I don't have much Batman hope for movies. Justice League, because I've seen Batman versus Superman, and I've seen the extended cut.
There was like four good Batman movies over the entirety of DC's cinematic universe. It starts with everything else has been garbage.
There's five. Batman Forever.
There's five good Batman movies.
The Dark Knight. Batman Begins. And Batman 1 with Keaton.
Yeah, those are all good.
I would say Batman Returns is solid.
The Tim Burton Batman was good.
Well, wait, I think I opened with that one. Batman Forever is definitely in my top five.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I love that as a kid.
And to get on this cut bullshit that everybody's on, release the Schumacher cut of Batman Forever, you nerds at Warner Brothers. I'm going to bully you all until you do it.
Schumacher cut. Yeah.
Because that's apparently how you get stuff done online, is you keep complaining and calling people pussies or being like stuff for not putting out products, I guess. I don't know. We just need to get a tidal wave of vitriol so that they'll be like, oh, you got it, guys. Coming to HBO Max.
I just seriously don't understand how, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has, like, completely taken over the movie industry, and the DC Universe just keeps becoming more and more of a garbage fire as time goes on.
They don't know what they're doing. They clearly don't know what they're doing.
But their animated unit is fucking amazing. DC animated?
There was a brief period where it was rough in the middle. Like, after Dark Knight Returns 1 and 2, it felt like there was a little bit of a dark age, for me anyways, of
the stuff that
they were adapting, and also like the money like that the they were putting joke. Into it were like not my favorite, but they've really come back around ever since like maybe Death of Superman. That one was pretty sick, and everything I'd say since then has been pretty good. Plus now I can watch it on HBO Max for free. Not for free, but for $15 a month if I decide to. Instead of blind buying a $15 or $20 animated movie and like just being like, please be good. I can't get this $20 back. I already opened it. And if it's bad, I can't give it to nobody. Because what? That's like The Ring? I'm just supposed to curse somebody with this other movie?
We all got Killing Joke hurt, right? That's where it really started, was the Killing Joke. Where there's that first hour where then Batman fucks Batgirl and you just go, wait, what?
Yeah,
the whole first hour
prologue is bullshit, but the actual adaptation of the Killing Joke could have been spot on if they had just made that one of those shorts.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they did the DC Showcase? They did like Jonah Hex and the Spectre. Like, make it one of those, because those fucking rocked.
They did rock.
It was funny because I was watching right around then. I was watching the Batman Beyond Blu-ray set, and in that, but you find out that Bruce Wayne and Babs fucked and were like married and had a kid, I believe. And so I was like, when I watched that, I was like, oh, weird. And like everybody was like, yeah, this is the best cartoon ever. And then DC Animated like had put the sex scene in there, and people were like, oh my God.
I wanted it implied. I never wanted to see it.
Oh, dude, remember when they put out the...
It's like your parents. Like, I know they did it, but I don't want to watch.
Remember they put out the Batman comic where you see Batman's dick?
Oh, yeah, I do, Jack. I sold it for like $90. I do remember it very well.
I'm mad that everybody talks about seeing Batman's dick like it was right there on the big page when it's like a sliver in the moonlight.
I never saw it.
Like,
doesn't he like hang dong?
You can't see shit. You can't even tell if he's like circumcised or not. It's frustrating.
It's a dick.
Yeah, the
sliver.
Way that everybody talks, like, you fucking see Batman's dick! Sliver. And it's like, where?
I was hoping like, it was like Batman's
Like, anatomically, it has to be in that zone, that region, but like, It ain't. Like, it's all in shadow, just like Batman. You don't see him. You don't see it. You don't see little Bruce. The bat pole, if you will. I think that was my favorite
Can
thing.
Can we end on bat dick? I wish I could talk with you guys about this DC spiral all night, but I'm
okay, bat dick. That's a wrap.
But, bat dick.
It's a nice outro for a great book. Like,
it
reckless.
Is, it is a reckless.
We got reckless here, at the end, guys. We got real Ethan loose there. We all might be a little high. This is who knows?
We're wrapping up our second season here, where we covered Ed Brubaker and we covered the Vault White Noise books. Definitely want to thank everyone that's listened. We are now heading into the world of Cy Spurrier and also into the world of Fantagraphics, which are a great little company that release all kinds of cool hardcovers and nice indie niche books, which we can't wait to talk to you guys about. We do have David Dwanch and Brockton McKinney coming on this week as well. They'll be on Friday, which is a really cool pleasure. Got to thank Blake for scoring that one, getting these guys kind of aware of us. And I had a great time talking about Ed Brubaker. I feel like he's a kind of a writer we can revisit in the future because he has so much in his bibliography that we could talk about.
Yeah, we really
and so much of it
barely
is excellent.
Scratched the surface, I think, on Brubaker.
Yeah,
we didn't scratch the surface. We reached in and we grabbed a big old handful, but there's still so much left in this box. Like there's still so many good stories we could talk about.
We could have talked about Brubaker for a year easy.
Yeah.
He's great. Really, to all you guys, if you haven't read his stuff,
awesome.
The whole Criminal series is amazing.
We haven't convinced you over the last 5 weeks. I don't know that we're gonna, but for real, if you've checked him out, I think you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, Jack is a new time reader. You loved it.
Yeah,
I love that.
I was excited to
so many
I've
of these
read
creators.
A couple of his books a long time ago, but I was excited to dig in more. He's my dad's favorite writer, so I've like heard throughout my whole life, like, oh, Ed Brubaker. So actually reading him, I was like, damn, yeah, Ed Brubaker, fuck yeah.
Hell yeah.
You're like, my dad has good taste.
Yeah, who would have thought? No,
but I appreciate everyone that's listening. We can't wait to move on. Our next season's our biggest yet. We have so many guests coming on. We have one we still haven't announced yet, which there's a little hint if you listen to our conversation with Kevin Cuff and Bob France. And we do have David Popose coming on as well, and we do have Kevin Rodatelli coming on to talk about Freak Snow as well, which it's really exciting to have all these creators reaching out to us. It makes us all feel kind of cool because we're just, a bunch of guys that love comics. So we appreciate you guys reaching out to us. It's nice to know that you're all as humble as us.
And if you're a creator listening now and you want to get in on this action and talk to four pretty cool guys like us, just hit us up on the Outside the Panels Twitter.
Which is outside with a zero, the, at Twitter. And that's also where you guys can find us. And you can find me as PoetAir33 on Twitter.
You can find me at BTMorgan85 on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Chaz Simons, also on Twitter. And in real life.
And you can find me as Sin_aesthetics with an X on Twitter or SinAesthetic anywhere else.
As always, you guys, on a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one-note song. You could think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do. And you don't feel much like riding. You just wish the trip was through. So you say,
turn the page.
Here I am. We're just going to cut it in. Go ahead, Chaz.
No, you cut it in. I'll just let Jack cut in that first one. I got it real clear on that one.
I always love not cutting out the part where we say not to cut some, or not cutting out the part where we say to cut something out.
We start doing this like speak song, and I was like, okay. And then you started singing, and I was like, all right, I'm into this. And then there was a long beat, and I was like, oh, fuck, I think I'm supposed to come in. I think I just lost track of where I was at.
The rest of it is, say, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing the star again. There I go.
And now I come in. with the turn the page and wash your hands.
Let's give Jack the most work ever.
Sorry, guys.